Welcome to Story Share, a podcast from InterviewGirl.com that brings you inspiring stories and advice each week. Today, Interview Girl interviews Mr. Michael Santos as part of the Interview Girl Foundation's Voices That Are Not Always Heard project. In this project, Victoria interviews people whom we do not always see in our society. One part of this project is called Stories from Prison. She's collecting stories from people serving time in prison as well as people who have served time in prison. Mr. Santos spent more than a quarter century in prison. While in prison, he was able to earn university degrees, publish more than a dozen books, earn a substantial taxable income, marry his wife, and build a strong support network, and ultimately emerge successfully and with dignity. In this episode, you'll learn how Mr. Santos changed during his time in prison and how he was able to do what he did while incarcerated, and you'll learn all the inspiring things he's now doing. Okay, here's the Interview Girl's discussion with Mr. Santos.
So I was a young man making bad decisions back in the mid-1980s. And when I was 20 years old, I started trafficking in cocaine after being influenced by a popular movie that was popular back then. So I decided to, begin that life during the recklessness of youth. And cooperated with a few of my friends from high school, moved to Miami, and began purchasing cocaine and stuff and sending it back to Seattle, where I grew up. And that lasted for about a year and a half until authorities arrested me. It was my first time coming into the criminal justice system in this way, and I was at that time really only concerned with getting out of the criminal justice system rather than accepting responsibility for the bad decisions that I had made. And I conveyed that to my attorney. My attorney convinced me to continue to plead not guilty and to fight this case, which I did. And the jury saw through my charade and convicted me on every count. So I was facing a sentence of life without the possibility of parole when I was 23 years old. And during this awkward stage between the time that I was convicted and the time that I was sentenced, I started to pray for guidance and look for some type of strength to carry me through the challenging times that were certain to come. And it was through those prayers, I think I was led to a philosophy book where I had been not a good student, and I'd never read philosophy before, but I began flipping through the pages of this anthology, and I came across the story of Socrates, who was also incarcerated in this particular story. And when Socrates had an opportunity to escape or to leave his problems behind, he instead chose to remain and to serve the sentence with, to accept the sentence. And when he asked why he would do that, he said that he lived in a democracy, and in a democracy he had the right to change laws he didn't agree with, but he didn't have the right to break laws. And that statement had a really profound influence on me as I lay on that concrete block thinking about the decades that would be ahead. I started to think about the bad decisions that I had made as a young man and if there were steps that I could take to reconcile with society. So those thoughts led me to start, led me into a period of introspection when I would begin to not only contemplate my past bad decisions, but I'd also contemplate the future and whether, first of all, there was anything that I could do while I was in there to help people see me as something more than the bad decisions of my past. And that approach led me to contemplate, I guess you might call them, role models or avatars or mentors or people with whom I would like to connect in the future. And so I started thinking about, well, who are the people I'm going to meet in my future? And is there anything that I can do to influence their perceptions of me so that they would see me as something more than the bad decisions of my past? And I concluded that, yes, that there probably is something. And when I started to reflect more, I realized that they would expect me to focus on on my education. They would expect me to focus on or build a record showing that I'm contributing to society in meaningful, measurable ways. And they would expect me to build a support network of people who believed in me. And if I could do that, then perhaps I believed opportunities would open for me to live as a law-abiding, contributing citizen, not only while I was incarcerated, but also upon my release. And that became the pathway that guided me through my prison journey. So I was in prison for 26 years. That's 9,500 days. And I concluded my, while I was incarcerated, I executed that plan of working to educate myself. So I earned an undergraduate degree from Mercer University and a master's degree from Hofstra University while I was inside. And then I began studying toward a PhD until the warden put an end to my formal education. And so I was not able to complete the PhD. I only finished the first year, but the warden then blocked me from continuing. Wow. And when he blocked me from continuing my education, I turned my attention to publishing, hoping to help more people understand the criminal justice system and the people that the criminal justice system holds, and strategies for people who are going through prison to understand how they can emerge successfully or make the best part of the journey. And that led me to writing a number of books, and through those books, I built a very strong support network. In fact, I got married because of my writing. My girl, who became my wife, learned about my work, and we developed a correspondence and a romance, and we got married. Actually, it'll be 12 years ago tomorrow.
Wow.
24. Yeah, 2003. So we got married in the prison visiting room. And through my work, I was able to support her and pay taxes, even though I was in prison. And put my wife through school, and she became a nurse. And she's currently just finished her master's in nursing just a couple of weeks ago. Mm-hmm. But it was a wonderful journey for both of us to recognize that regardless of where we are at a given time, we can always work toward building something better. And I concluded my obligation to the Bureau of Prisons, as I said, after 9,500 days in August of 2013. A couple of weeks later, I was an adjunct professor at San Francisco State University, where I taught a course helping people understand the injustices that follow a commitment, or what I call a wrong-headed commitment to mass incarceration. And I began working to help those who are going through the criminal justice system emerge in the best possible way. And that's what my work is about right now.
Wow, such an incredible story. Just so many questions. I guess I'll begin with, so what are some of these, you know, injustices that you're talking about, or what are you trying to help people that are incarcerated see that, you know, when you come out, there is hope? Is that what you mean by that?
No, that is what I mean by that. There is hope. Hope is the answer, I believe. But the injustices that follow a commitment to mass incarceration are that, well, there's so many. Let's just start with how the longer we can look at data and see that the longer we expose somebody to corrections, the less likely that person becomes to function as a law-abiding contributing citizen, because that individual becomes marginalized and he is cut off from opportunities to advance and grow with society. And the more people that we incarcerate, the less resources are available for people like you, young people, and educational opportunities, or funding education and funding healthcare and funding other social services that can build a better society. We incarcerate more people than any other country on earth, both per capita and just basic numbers. And the people who emerge from there return to society without the skill set or opportunities to function. So my work is to try and help them transition into the job market, to help them develop skills that have atrophied while they were incarcerated, help creating programs and services to help those people who are incarcerated understand how to reject the criminal lifestyle and focus on living as a good citizen. Part of it is to build programs that will help the formerly incarcerated transition into the job market. And part of my program is speaking and teaching and educating more people on why it makes sense to build a criminal justice system that has a more focused on the outcome, which is what we want, to build safer communities rather than focusing on simply punishing or warehousing people and effectively making them incapable as statistical mm-hmm. that are coming back and becoming a part of our societies, the fabric of our society.
Right. And do you feel that you are able to reach people inside the prisons, or is it a huge task to get your programs to prisoners? Or once you actually do reach these individuals, do you feel that sometimes it's difficult to get through to them? Do you feel that, that you're, obviously it's challenging, but do you feel that you're making headway with your work, but at times it is challenging?
It is absolutely challenging, but I am absolutely making headway. Currently, programs that I've designed are being used in the state of Maine's prison system, and I am working through the bureaucracy to introduce it into the state of Washington's prison system and the state of California's prison system and the state of Michigan's prison system. So I'm still, I'm an army of one, but I'm working every day and continuing to develop content. I'm also creating it through my podcast, the Earning Freedom Podcast, and connecting with people. And I hope inspiring people to recognize that regardless of what bad decisions they made in the past or what challenging circumstances they face today, we all have the power within to begin building a better life. And I try to teach that through the context of my journey, but also provide actionable strategies that they can use as well.
Right, right. Oh. And is there anything, from your perspective that the average everyday person can do to, help your cause here?
I think that people, really my work for taxpayers or for just citizens who are here in society, my work is really to educate them and help them understand why we can do better with our criminal justice system, what steps we can take to why we should support legislation or political parties that talk about the criminal justice system, because it influences every American. And a lot of people are resistant to that message because they don't understand how the system operates. Mm-hmm. And until I can help them understand why it influences their life, for example, I don't know you, Victoria, but I can see from your photograph that you're quite a young person, and you may not appreciate how this commitment to mass incarceration that our nation has made influences your life. But if you are a student, it influences your financial aid. If you are a young person who has an elderly parent or grandparent, it influences their access to health care. Mm-hmm. It really influences everybody. And it's my job to try and show them, or to ask, help them at least question, well, maybe we can do something better. If we incarcerate 2.3 million people and they're serving sentences that are far too long, and we eradicate mechanisms that will allow them to work toward earning freedom, then are we building a safer society, or are we building a society that of a prison nation that is actually perpetuating gangs and creating a subculture of failure and is actually influencing the children of prisoners? And, I want to show how we can do things better. So I don't know that I need their help. What I need is just to help them understand how it influences, how our nation's massive prison system influences their life, number one. And and their employers, help them understand why it makes sense to open job opportunities for the formerly incarcerated rather than block off opportunities for the job opportunities for the formerly incarcerated.
Right. Yeah, and that, like you were saying, it is probably the type of thing where a lot of people just don't think about those aspects of how it does affect everybody. And so when you do hear these stories and it's just brought to your attention, you think about the criminal justice system a little bit more. And so a question that I always ask all the people that I interview is, you know, so in your case, I would pose it like this: what life lessons did you learn while you were in prison, or just, you know, having gone through what you went through?
Well, the life lesson is that regardless of what challenges or difficulties we may face at any given time, we can always pursue a principled and deliberate path that will lead us to a better outcome, that will lead us to a life of fulfillment and relevance and meaning. But it doesn't happen by accident. We cannot bury our head in the sand and say that we don't live in a challenging environment. We have to recognize that each of us has a responsibility to deal with the world as it exists rather than as we would like it to be. So we can always grow from the inspiring words that Gandhi spoke about, which advised us to be the change that we want to see in the world, just as you are doing, Victoria, to be the change that you want to see in the world and work toward building a better life and a better society every day. So that's one takeaway. The reality is all of us as human beings, we face a struggle or challenging times at one time or another. My message is told through the context of a prison journey. But the reality is, it's the same message or strategy for a better life for anybody who faces a struggle. Whatever that struggle may be, it may be the loss of a loved one, it may be divorce, it may be obesity, it may be substance abuse, it may be a financial reversal. The reality is, whatever struggle we face, it can feel imprisoning, and it can extinguish our hope. But if we find and embrace this principled path, we can use it in such a way to build a life of fulfillment, relevance, and meaning. And that's what I strive to teach to people.
Oh, wow. Wow. And would it be accurate to say, based on the story that you just told here, that it was so crucial in your story, that idea of that early knowledge that you acquired that really motivated you and helped you to do everything that you have done thus far? Would that be accurate to say?
Yes, I will attribute my growth to that initial reading of Socrates' message, and then there were many, many, many more. I would call masterminds. In fact, I created a mastermind program, and that mastermind program describes the lessons I learned from people like Socrates and Nelson Mandela and Viktor Frankl and Gandhi and Steve Jobs and Bill Gates and Jack Welch and so many other people who have achieved a high level of success or contribution. And there are patterns in that, and it's those patterns that inspired and empowered me, and I'm convinced that they can empower and inspire others as well.
Yes. Oh, they definitely can. Well, yeah, when you said that, it really resonated with me, because the whole, you know, backbone of my movement here is just the power in stories and how they have the ability to transform us and change us and affect us. And then when you opened with that about how, well, when I read Socrates, I thought, oh, see, there's another example.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. He wrote that. I mean, that's a story that lived now for more than 2,500 years. We can see the same story in biblical writings or in modern day as well. We learn from other people. And to the extent that we incorporate those lessons and create our own plans and then execute those plans, we can engineer our way to a life of fulfillment and relevance.
Right, right. Absolutely. Well, I just want to thank you so much for, you know, taking the time to speak with me and share your story.
What a great interview. Michael's message is told through the context of a prison journey, but his story teaches us that we can all work toward building a better life every day. All of us face challenging times at one time or another in our lives. Whatever struggle we face in our lives, it can feel imprisoning and it can extinguish our hope. But if we find and embrace a principled path, we can use it to build a life of fulfillment, relevance, and meaning. We're ending this episode with reflection questions because remember, it's with our questions that we can bring change to the world. Today we leave you with our question quest. What struggle do you face in your own life? What can you do to overcome this struggle? Thank you for being part of another episode of StoryShare, the podcast from interviewgirl.com that brings you inspiring stories and advice each week. We hope that you are encouraged and motivated from hearing Mr. Michael Santos's story.